This is Lars. Thanks again for checking out my podcast. Enjoy your day and the show, and let's make America great again. Welcome back to Lars, Lars and Joe, and welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network. Pleasure to be with you. I want to tell you in a moment a crazy idea from a Northwest prosecutor who thinks it's his job to find excuses for not prosecuting criminals, and he actually hired a guy whose job it was to unconvict the already convicted. And it didn't work out too well for Mike Schmidt, the social justice warrior DA of Multnomah County. You got to hear the whole story. But let me get to that in just a moment. First, welcome to the show. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, we'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And the reach of this program for more than 21 years has been the entire Pacific Northwest, the states of Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. We are glad to have you on board. Today's Twitter poll, and we're going to talk about this in detail a little bit later on this hour, is vote by mail a secure way to hold elections? I would vote no on that. And people from around the country who ask me about vote by mail, I said, look, I voted by mail in Oregon. I'm now a Washington resident. I vote by mail in Washington. It's the only choice you have. And I've always warned people, this system is so fraught with opportunities for fraud that I think there's no way that we're not seeing fraud in the vote by mail. And if they say, well, provide us proof. That's one of the worst things about vote by mail, is that in vote by mail, finding that fraud and identifying that fraud is very, very difficult. It's well to nigh impossible, especially when the people in charge don't want to find it. They don't want to look for it. And I know Washington State has a Republican Secretary of State who's in charge of that. I have respect for Kim Wyman, but I think she's wrong. Because when you say, well, just go back and count the ballots again, it ain't the ballots that are the problem. As we found out in the 2020 election, it's about who's getting the ballots and sending them in. Simply recounting the ballots, that doesn't make any difference. So let me cite a brand new poll that's out. And as I said, we're going to talk about it more in depth a little bit later on this hour with an expert. I don't claim to be the smartest guy in the room ever. I just get the smartest guys and gals to come on the show and lend their expertise to you. But a brand new Rasmussen reports. Rasmussen is a major national polling firm. And I've always found that they tend to be right down the middle. There are polling firms that tilt to the left and there are polling firms that tilt to the right. Brand new Rasmussen Report survey finds that 65% of likely U.S. voters believe that wider use of mail-in voting will lead to more cheating in elections, and 51% of that number say it's very likely there will be cheating. 28% do not think that more mail-in voting will mean more cheating, and about 14% who say it's not at all likely. So in other words, the minority viewpoint is that vote by mail is solid, and about two-thirds of Americans among likely voters think that cheating in vote by mail is likely, and 51% who say it's very likely. So you can find the Twitter poll today at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And if you don't like Twitter, go to my website. That's easy too. The vote counts the same. LarsLarson.com. Is vote by mail a secure way to hold elections? I'd vote no on that one, and at least I know our vote counts are actually legitimate. Today's Twitter poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, I know a lot of people want to talk, but I've got to tell you this story, because we talked about this joker a few weeks ago. A guy's name is Ernest Warren. And he is an attorney, and he has been a defense attorney his entire career. In fact, one of the things you'll find mentioned in virtually every story that's been done about this guy is that he started the first black-owned law firm in Portland. Okay, good. Bully for him. Well, he got hired by Multnomah County's social justice warrior DA, Mike Schmidt. Now, you might remember Mike Schmidt came into office just over a year ago. He came in promising that he would find ways not to prosecute people, and he has done exactly that. During a year or more of riots and looting and arson, he has found excuses, hundreds of them, to say, in the interest of justice, I'm not going to prosecute this case and that case and the other case. It totals up to about 1,000 cases that he has declined to prosecute over the last just over a year now. So what's his next brilliant idea? Well, he went out and he said, I'm going to spend $203,000 a year on the salary to hire Ernest Warren, a black attorney. And what is Ernest Warren's job in the prosecutor's office, the DA's office, going to be? It's his job to go through cases where they've already convicted the criminal. In other words, it's already been to trial. It's already been to a jury. The criminal has already been convicted. And his job was to unconvict people. And I said, that's an outrageous idea to begin with. We've got enough defense attorneys out there whose job it is to get guilty people back on the streets. Now, I frequently have people say, well, no, defense attorneys don't defend guilty people. I said, au contraire, if you actually ever talk to a defense attorney and you ask them in your heart of hearts, do you know that most of the people that you represent in court are actually guilty of the thing that they are accused of? They'll tell you, yeah. But it's their job to get the best result, even for people who are guilty of assault and rape and sodomy and murder. It is their job, even if the person is guilty, to get them back on the street and have the jury find them not guilty. That's their job. And defense attorneys do it all day long. So you hire a guy like that, you put him into the prosecutor's office, and you say, now your job is to go back through a whole bunch of cases where we've already done the hard work of convicting this person. And it is deliberately hard. The Constitution says if you're going to be found guilty of a crime that you're accused of, the state, in this case, the state of Oregon, the state's job is to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury of your peers, having allowed you, you know, the benefit of counsel, the benefit of the chance to confront your accusers, that it is your job to prove to that jury beyond a reasonable doubt. That's a high standard that this person is guilty. This guy, Ernest Warren, was going to be paid $200,000 a year by the taxpayers to sit in the prosecutor's office and unconvict people. That was his job. Well, guess what? He just got his walking papers. Now, the DA's office says, now, this is the way they do it. This is diplomacy at Mike Schmidt's office, you know, social justice warrior Schmidt, because he's now put in a tough spot. He hires a black attorney to go out and unconvict people, a large number of them who are BIPOC. And he says, Warren's switch from defense attorney to prosecutor is a hard transition. Right. A huge paycheck to be the fox in the henhouse, the defense attorney in the prosecutor's office, playing anti-prosecutor or unprosecutor, if you will, seeking the acquittal of the already convicted and blessed by the district attorney. I know it sounds bizarre. It sounds like the world's been turned upside down. Well, now it turns out that Warren was actually presented, according to the Fish Wrapper, the Oregonian, with the option of either resigning or facing termination. A young woman working the office, he's only been there a short time. And she was saying, look, this guy keeps talking about my appearance. In another incident, Warren apparently fell asleep during a meeting with national counterparts. He wasn't exactly a prize catch when it comes to hiring somebody. He's now gone. We've got another prosecutor in Seattle to talk about in a bit. But first, coming up in the Northwest Nonsense, we're going to talk about anarchists running wild and nobody gets arrested.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
What does it say about any city when 100 anarchists run wild smashing things and the police chief's most substantial response to it is sending out a tweet? $500,000 in damage Tuesday night to private property and businesses in downtown Portland. And Police Chief Chuck says he's very concerned. Well, no kidding, Chief Chuck. Problem is, when you hear about a rampage by 100 rioters in a city with more than a year's riot experience, the question is, did the police arrest anybody? No, they did not make a single arrest. Apparently, the rioters hit 35 different sites, and that took some time, including coffee shops, retail stores, and banks. That did take some time, but apparently no meaningful response from the police. The mob left behind graffiti, quote, breaking windows is good. By the way, this week we learned another bank has decided to abandon the boarded up war zone of downtown Portland for someplace safer. Almost any place would be safer than that. except maybe downtown Seattle. The police sent out a press release giving the number of rioters, the location of the attack, the businesses that were hit, you know, the who, what, and when, and where. What Chief Chuck didn't even try to explain, why no arrests? I'd like to ask Chief Chuck that myself, but I've been asking for interviews with the guy way back to when he was first appointed. No luck there. I think we know why. Portland's police commissioner, feckless Ted Wheeler, has a hands-off approach to the anarchist types that he has aided and abetted, and he even tried cozying up to over the past 18 months. Remember when he joined them for a tear gas party downtown? Didn't exactly work well for Ted. They called him Tear Gas Ted after that one. The rioters know to a certainty that they can do what they want. Police will not arrest, prosecutors will not prosecute, City Hall has their back, so expect it to get a whole lot worse. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, the Grill of the Day goes to Police Chief Chuck Lavelle for all the reasons I just mentioned, for being the mayor's yes man. Doesn't it make you proud, Chuck? You finally got to be chief, and your job is to simply do whatever the mayor tells you to do. Say yes, salute, say yes, sir, and you still get the paycheck and the big office and everything else. You don't actually serve the citizens by doing what you're doing and what you're not doing. And allowing the city's anarchists to run amok, do hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage, put people's lives and safety at risk, and not make a single arrest of any of those criminals. But he promises one of these days, real soon, they're going to go after those criminals. You know, kind of like they're still going after the criminals that 2.5 years ago beat journalist Andy Ngo down to the pavement. Yep, they're still working on that one, too. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company in the Northwest. Now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus online at RiverCityUSA.com/careers. Greg writes in from Malott, Washington. He says, bless the blue. He says, I'm still shaking mad when I hear about the Loudoun County, Virginia school board pulling a Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing about the sexual assault on one of their students. Something similarly happened to our daughters in Vinita, Oregon. We got calls from some boys that eventually ended up with them threatening to blow their heads off with a shotgun at school. Not the brightest boys, as they left this message on our answering machine. We took this very seriously, as Kip Kinkle had done his thing before. We called the school. We were told nothing could be done. Called the district office and the superintendent. Nothing could be done. The only person that got anything done was a sheriff's deputy, since we made it known that our girls were not going back to the school until the boys were gone. God bless the blue. Signed, Greg. Now to your calls. I want to start with Tim. Hey, Tim, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. You've got a little news about the unvaccinated today. What is it?
I do. I guess now I'm a former employee of Spirit Mountain Casino. They decided to let everybody go today that didn't have vaccines. They aren't accepting any kind of exemptions whatsoever. I've had this COVID thing twice. My doctor tells me do not take the shot. I have natural antibodies, and they're not taking anything into consideration down there. No medical, no religious exemptions. It's either take the shot or lose your job. And that's what they're doing, is they're escorting people out of the building today with their badges, taking their badges away. They're trying to force people to sign termination letters so they can't collect unemployment. Several things. If you look in their own smoke signals magazine that's put out by the casino, yeah, they received almost $84 million from the feds and the state to basically do this to the employees.
And they got $84 million in COVID relief money that was supposed to keep businesses going as they had to shut down during the pandemic, and now they're going to let everybody go who's not vaccinated.
Exactly. And then I've also learned that there's some tribal members that their housing was even threatened if they didn't take the vaccine, that they would be thrown out of their housing.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do with this?
Gonna,
I mean, because your doctor told you, you've had it twice, don't get the shot. You've got a good, solid medical reason for doing it, and the tribes aren't going to respect that?
They're not respecting anything. No, nothing whatsoever. It's either take the shot or lose your job. And you can't collect unemployment. You can't do anything. I'll just find a different job. I lived without the casino for 55 years, but they seem to think that it doesn't matter. There's some people there that have been 26 years since the day it opened, and they told them they got to leave.
Unbelievable. Tim, I'm going to get your contact information. I'll have Bryce grab your contact information from you if you don't mind. Let me go to Aaron, who's a naysayer. Aaron, we love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about today?
Well, kind of about the issue with the prosecutor undoing convictions. They're legally required to start working on that in the state of Oregon because there are a lot of false convictions. There was a Supreme Court ruling called the Remus decision that stated that it must be a unanimous jury, which is what's always been the constitutional standard.
But we're not talking about unanimous juries. This guy was put to work to undo convictions that were not, they're already dealing with the non-unanimous juries, which was the law for a long time. Actually, they
they're
are.
They're not dealing with the unanimous.
We've talked about it on the show.
Okay, well, I've been pulling teeth trying to figure out how to get a past conviction of mine that was an 11-1 jury overturned, and they said there's no process for that, that I just have to sit around and wait until they get to it. And they won't even tell me who they is. I asked, do I speak to the appellate court? Do I speak to an appellate attorney? Who do I talk to? They said, nothing, just wait. So I'm my whole life's on hold, still waiting on this, waiting to move on past this conviction that's over 10 years old. My whole life is waiting on hold.
Have you tried post-conviction relief, which is allowed in Oregon? And in Oregon, they pursue post-conviction relief all the time. All the time.
I have tried pursuing post-conviction relief, not on this case.
That may be the problem, Aaron. If you don't go after the case you were convicted on, how are you going to get unconvicted on it? And that was not Ernest Warren's job. His job was to undo legitimate convictions. We'll be back in just a moment. It's the Radio Northwest Network on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Here's one for you. If you listen to a lot of elected officials, both on the right and the left, both Republicans and Democrats, and you ask them about the November 3rd election, they say, oh, clean as a houndstooth, pure as the driven snow. There was not a problem with it. It was the most secure election in American history ever, bar none, period, stop, end of story. You say, hold on a second. It was that pure? It was that clean? Well, that's if you listen to the mainstream media and you listen to most of those in elective office, who I believe have a bit of a dog in the fight. Then go out and ask the American public. And what do you find out? At least a couple of major polls that are out just this week. One of them from Rasmussen, a second one from another group. And they suggest, no, you know, about 2/3 of Americans, at least likely voters, say we don't think that the election system, especially the one done by vote by mail, some states have it as their only way to vote. Other states have begun using it, experimenting with it, and we're finding that there are lots of opportunities to cheat or at least have the states not follow their own rules. I thought we'd talk about that with Patrick Byrne, who's CEO and founder of the America Project. Patrick, welcome back to the program.
Great to be on again, Mr. Larson. Thanks for having me.
Have I misstated what Americans actually believe? Not those Americans in high office, not those Americans who work in the mainstream media, but just plain old I vote every election Americans. What do they think about vote by mail?
Exactly right. Over 2/3 of them do not believe in this election. Actually, down to 28.7%, less than a third, well less than a third, will say that they believe Joe Biden won fair and square, 28%. It's almost only a quarter will say that. The rest have some level of doubt, most of them large amounts of doubt.
Yeah, and they're also saying not just about the November 3rd election of 2020, but looking forward when they're asked, well, what do you think? We're going to have more mail-in voting almost certainly in the midterm election next year. What do they say about the prospect of vote by mail predicting or creating an opportunity for a legitimate result?
Only 38% of Americans believe that the election 1 year from now, next November, will be fair and honest. Less than 40% believe in it now. So they have completely shot the federal government has shot their load. If they thought they were going to, you know, let this happen and then just browbeat everybody into forgetting it, they got another thing coming, because two-thirds of Americans don't believe it. It has slipped over 10% against Biden since inauguration. So there's nothing they can do. That's actually what I think gives guys like you and I safety. It, you know, lining us up against the firing squad now would only exacerbate the unraveling of people's faith in the election. So,
I mean, Patrick, I live in a vote-by-mail state. I've seen it happen for 20 years. I see the opportunities for fraud. I've begged for some kind of audit that would actually get to the bottom of things that I then saw happen last year in Arizona and other states, where they used the excuse of the pandemic, even though there had been a bunch of elections held, primary elections and other things, in the early part of 2020 with no problem whatsoever. But those in charge said, let's use this as an excuse to have vote by mail. And when a lot of us said, hold on a second, the U.S. Constitution says any state can have any laws they want in how they regulate their elections, but the laws have to be passed by the legislature. Did you get your legislature to sign off on these changes? And they say, oh no, it was an emergency. We had to make the changes without going through the process that, by the way, is required by the U.S. Constitution. You know, a tiny little technicality like that, but I think it's worth bringing up. And they said, no, we didn't have to follow the law or the Constitution.
Yeah, well, it just shows you that's not incidental. These people are completely against the Constitution. They're anti-Constitution. They want to hijack it. They know that they stole in this election, and they want to change all the rules so they can lock it in and have rigged elections permanently.
So what do we do to stop that? You're with the America Project. You created it. What do we do to stop that? Because if we go to vote by mail permanently with the inbuilt opportunities for fraud, should people decide to engage in fraud? I mean, you know, one of the oldest jokes in politics is about dead people in Chicago voting multiple times and that sort of thing. If we give them this opportunity, will we ever get a legitimate election back?
No, we're done. We go through a tipping point. And the kinds of fraud that were turned up in Maricopa go far beyond the dead people voting. When you're talking about dead people voting, yeah, there's a couple hundred in Philadelphia that voted this and that. That's not the issue. We're talking about, we've discovered there are ways to commit election fraud on the order of hundreds of thousands of votes. That's what turned up in Maricopa. That's why they deleted a million files. That's why they even still, the auditors found hundreds of thousands of votes with no origin, no justification. They didn't cut, you know, hundreds of thousands of votes in are illegal or highly questionable have been located in Maricopa. That's all been covered up. But if you actually read the report, that's what's there. And if we let this pass, we have one more chance, 1 year from now. If this coming election, we let the goons cheat, then we will have tipped our way into a Venezuelan style kleptocracy, just a thief state, a state of goons, government by goons, governed by heavies. And you know what you see in Chicago now, we will never get out of it for the country. So we have election in 12 months. If that's not clean, the one in 12 months, this is over for our country.
You know, it's funny. There was a member of Congress within the last week or 10 days. I can't recall the name, but it was a member of Congress who was asked, okay, do you think the 2020 election was valid? And he said, the states didn't follow their laws. And this seemed to confuse the CNN interrogator, you know, who was asking the question. He said, what do you mean? He said they didn't follow their laws. I mean, you don't have to get into, you know, satellites or computers or anything like that before you even look at, were these people registered to vote? Did they actually sign their ballot? Were they authorized to get a ballot? Because in some states, to get an absentee mail ballot, you have to actually request it. Did they request a ballot? Before you get to even that, you just say, did the state follow its laws? No. Well, what does the Constitution require? That you have to follow the law. And if you want to change it, you're free to change it. Just call a special session of your legislature, which during the pandemic they could have done. They could have said, you know, we got a pandemic. Let's have a special session. It'll be one day. Everybody's going to agree that we're going to change our system of voting. They decided not to do that because why? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, because the people who decided were the Democrats, got 700 lawyers involved, including Mark Elias, and they went around and jammed the election laws in every state. And they did their best to get it done through the election bureaucrats of each state rather than the legislatures. and they got it done to make it as loosey-goosey as possible. So they knew if it got loosey-goosey everywhere, but especially in 13 swing states, they could then jam this election, and then once they stole it, they could step in and change the laws to make it so it could never be uncovered and never be reversed, and we could never have a fair election again. And hence, Nancy Pelosi came in with H.R. 1 and with a desire to create 25 million new voters out of illegal aliens and to jam the pack the Supreme Court, because they know they stole this election. So that's why the people in the states went out to the states, even though the Constitution is really quite unambiguous. It says the state legislatures decide how to run the elections.
Yep.
They went out to state bureaucrats who changed the rules without the legislature's approval, changed the rules. And it's, I would think it's pretty open and shut from a legal point of view. The Constitution is unambiguous about who has the authority to set the rules, and instead some other people made up some rules, and I don't see how that can possibly stand.
No, I don't either. Patrick Byrne is the CEO and founder of the America Project, and one other thing, he mentioned a name, Mark Elias. I know sometimes we mention names we don't explain. Elias is an attorney with a firm called Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie, the same law firm that the DNC and Hillary Clinton used to create the fake Russia dossier. Yeah, I know. It stinks to high heaven, and so does Perkins Coie. Back in just a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and your emails. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Lars Larson Show.
Let's do it.
Unemployment.
Tax cuts for the rich do not create jobs. Unemployment insurance creates jobs.
Stimulus.
There are several dollars included in the stimulus. It's not apparent what they have to do with actually stimulating the economy.
Homelessness.
A conscience cannot rest so long as they're homeless or are sleeping on our streets.
Taxes.
Want to raise taxes by $8 trillion. Guess what? Yes, we do.
Big Brother has taken control and wants more from you every single day. This is Government Gone Wild on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. Remember the union president I talked to yesterday? If you say, Lars, you're not a fan of unions. No, I'm not. But I don't deny people the right under federal law and under the Constitution to organize a union and belong to one if they want to. Do I think that's a smart thing for workers to do? No, I don't. But there are cases where I'd say unions actually serve a purpose, and this is one of them. An awful lot of unions have decided to just roll over and play dead when it comes to the vaccine mandates coming down from Joe Biden, from Jay Inslee, governor of Washington, and from Kate Brown, governor of Oregon. Some of them are standing up to try to fight back. One of them is the AOCE, the union that represents corrections workers. Now, I saw in the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper today a headline that said, gee, these corrections workers, meaning the people who act as guards and other kinds of functions inside of prisons and the correction system, they are one of the most unvaccinated groups in the state. I said, okay, that's their choice. That's their decision. Their union actually went to bat for them. Yesterday afternoon, I got an email from Elena Martinez, who is the president of the AOCE. She's been on the show before, and she said, I'm heading off to court to a hearing to try to get a temporary restraining order against Governor Brown's vax mandate. Well, I thought we better check and see what happened in that hearing yesterday, which was happening after the show ended. She wrote back, this is Elena Martinez, and I thought this is so telling. She said, judge denied the TRO, the temporary restraining order, awaiting my legal team's plans for a next step. I'll be making a statement as soon as I know the plan. We're still moving forward on the federal level. And by the way, some federal judges in America have already shot down the vaccine mandates in places like New York State, and very different in Texas as well. She says, we go before Judge Kasuhabe next week, currently caring for my husband who got the jab to keep his 20-year state career. It's like seeing him have COVID all over again. He is so sick, and he gets to use his personal time for this state-inflicted illness, which was imposed on us by Brown. Very telling. People are asking for the right to make their own medical decisions. The our bodies, ourselves crowd, you know, the pink hat crowd, they've all disappeared. They've headed for the shadows because they don't want to be around to be asked. So our bodies, ourselves, does that only apply to killing babies or does it apply to other medical decisions as well? And should these mandates stand? I don't think they're constitutional. I don't think they're legal. And I've been pointing out to you that even the Biden administration, which over a month ago said we're going to have a rule through OSHA that's going to apply to every private company in America that has more than 100 employees, they only got around to writing the rule and submitting it to the White House Office of Management and Budget this week, which means it likely will not be posted in the Federal Register by OSHA for some period of time. And I also pointed out to you the history of those temporary standards adopted by OSHA. They almost always get shot down in court, but they're going to push forward with it anyway, because they know that by the time the courts make a decision, an awful lot of people will have been forced to resign, including, say, in Redmond, Washington, the firefighters. About 20% of the firefighters in that town went to a city council meeting and said, look, give us the exemptions were guaranteed under federal law and the Constitution. And most of the governments have been saying, no, no, we're not going to give you anything. Like the caller who called me from Spirit Mountain earlier today, saying they're escorting people out of the building right now. The tribes buy into it. The state governments buy into it. Not every state government, 27 state governments have fought back. On that note, let's go to Bruce. Hey, Bruce, thanks for calling from Grants Pass, and thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Well, it's about this mail-in vote. People got to know that the state of Oregon is where it all started years ago, almost 20 years ago, with Governor Brown. Or, I'm sorry, with our county clerk. I've been in there for 20 years, and what I've seen this last year, including the hand count, which every precinct, when they wrote it down, every precinct was off, and they didn't want to put that in the news. Last thing, they had a copying machine I've never seen in the clerk's office. It was about three times the size of a regular printing machine, but it could actually, has paper special for the ballot and can actually print both sides of a ballot. And I watched it done twice, and it's there. So that was never supposed to be, but you can't have 20,000 ballots extra over what is actually in your county, and that's what they'd done 18 years ago. So I've seen it all, but I documented it all, too. So it's interesting. You had a man on, it was a week or so ago, who said no way that they could vote, that they could cheat or do anything else. Last thing I say, Patty McGuire was the administrator of the elections board, who was Bill Clinton's first campaign manager.
Now, well, let me throw one at you, Bruce. Stephen Trout, who was the head of elections for the state of Oregon, who quit. He quit about the time of the November 3rd election last year. And we've been trying to get him to come on the air. He had written a memo to the incoming secretaries of state when there was still just a Republican and a Democrat running. And he said, look, the computers are not up to this task. We cannot make this a secure election. And then he resigned from his job. I'd love to know what's keeping him quiet right now, and I'd love to talk to Stephen Trout. Haven't seen another word about him since he left the state's employ. And you've got the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I've got my own little conspiracy that's been going on for some time. I think that Jay Inslee of Washington State and Kate Brown of Oregon have been two of the best gifts that any criminal, convicted or not, any criminal could ever expect to get. They have cut loose thousands of people from prison. They have not spoken up at all when we had riots and arson and looting and violence going on in places like Seattle. In fact, at one point, Jay Inslee was asked about the takeover of the Chop Zone. He said, I'm not aware that that's even happened. Apparently, Jay doesn't follow the news very closely, and that happened literally weeks after that area was taken hostage by Antifa and BLM. But now, Kate Brown proposes to give even more gifts to violent criminals. And I thought we'd talk about that with a guy who knows violent criminals well, former District Attorney Josh Markey, who joins me now. Josh, I want to get right to this. What is Kate Brown considering doing beyond what's already been done for criminals in the state of Oregon, in this case, by changes in laws, by changes at the prisons, by feckless prosecutors who say, I'm not going to prosecute people, people like social justice warrior Mike Schmidt and people like Pete Holmes in Seattle and some of the other crazies that are running for the office right now? What's Kate promising to do?
Well, let's talk about her most recent plans, which were just revealed, I think, 2 weeks ago. Many people listening to your show know that effectively the death penalty has sort of been abolished without after legislation went through. Well, a bill went through in 2019 called SB 1008, and it effectively overturned Measure 11 as it applies to juveniles. So now, if Kip Kinkle were to commit his crime today, there's almost no way he could be tried as an adult. The standard has been raised to even move a 17-year-old who commits multiple murders to an almost impossible level. In 2 years, only one DA has managed to do it, and that was Kevin Barton in Washington County.
Okay, just so people understand the practical effect of that, Josh, if Kip Kinkle, the school shooter from Thurston High in Springfield, had committed his crime today and was tried as a juvenile, what is the absolute maximum he could be held in custody?
He could be held theoretically through his 25th birthday, and then he's released with no parole. And more importantly to me, at least, when asked the question at age 27, when he's applying for a job as a, you know, some
school teacher
work job, he can and ask the question, "Have you ever been convicted of a crime?" He can lawfully answer no. And if you tried to look it up, besides your, you know, knowledge of it, you wouldn't find a record of it. It is scrubbed off of all records. So what is Kate Brown doing? She's flush with victory from basically all these other extra legal, which is a nice way of saying illegal, attempts to thwart the work of the people. And she is now looking at 370 Measure 11 cases that happened before 2019. So the ones that are technically not affected by the law. But she is the outgoing governor, and she has what's called a plenary power of commutation. That means with a stroke of her pen, with no appeal and no ability to even necessarily be heard, any of the hundreds of the worst juvenile criminals, we're talking about, you know, murder, forcible rape, there's 370 of them. And the other side likes to call them children. Well, if they were ever children, they sure aren't now. We're talking about people in their 30s and 40s, overwhelmingly men, and overwhelmingly have committed very violent crimes.
Josh, for context's sake, let's put this in. At the time this bill was proposed, you came on this show multiple times, and I said it multiple times, this will end up being retroactive. And the people behind the bill, the proposed law, which is now in place, said, no, 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 it won't be retroactive. And Ellen Rosenblum's Department of Justice said it won't be retroactive. And the legislature's lawyers said it wouldn't be retroactive. And the governor and all these other state lawmakers that pushed this change said, we will not go back and make this retroactive to cases that have already been heard. And now even the nitwits at the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, like Therese Bottomley and Helen Young, the head of the editorial board and the editor of the paper, said, we're shocked to find out nobody knew that this would be retroactive. And I pointed out that we did this probably at least a dozen times, saying these laws are going to end up being retroactive. And that's what Kate Brown is proposing to do, is to make all of this retroactive to literally hundreds of violent former children, now adults, who she wants to effectively cut loose from prison.
Yeah, not only cut loose from prison, but let's remember, scrub their records. So, you know, the internet's a wonderful thing, but if you even now went and tried to find the record of, say, a juvenile that had been, you know, been arrested for a murder, say, in 2020, and maybe even one that made the news, you won't be able to find it. And then, more importantly, if you go to the source, if you go to the court data, which is public record, it's literally invisible. It's not there. Even if when I was a district attorney, I didn't have access to it. So what Kate's doing is she's operating extra legally here. This was not in the legislation. And as you said quite correctly, Lars, promises were made. You and I talked about this, as you say, at this particular law at least a half a dozen times in 2019. And now it's 2 years later, and she is announcing, and then there was an op-ed in the paper, I think yesterday, but somebody from the Oregon Criminal Justice Project basically saying, oh, rubbing their hands together and saying, well, Measure 11 has obviously failed, and, you know, let's undo all of it. And that's what
Well, and by the way, Josh, it is completely legal, and the legal system routinely looks at a criminal and says, this is a first offender. So we're going to treat this one differently, even if they're convicted of murder or convicted of rape or convicted of assault. We're going to treat this one differently. If we know this person has previously committed murder or rape or assault, we will sentence the person differently. We'll consider them for parole and probation differently because we know they've already got a history of doing this before. They've done it again now. They've been convicted. We're going to treat them differently. This will tell the system that if, you know, I know that Kate Brown has carefully, you know, kept Kinkle out of this, but other really heinous murders were committed by people. If their records are scrubbed, and then let's say 5 years or 10 years from now, they commit another murder, they'll be looked at as criminal virgins, won't they?
Absolutely. That's probably the most important point, is it's like a Brave New World or Orwell, where it's unhistory, where they simply erase it from reality.
And at this point, there's nothing that can stop her from doing this. She's a lame duck governor. She can't run for another term for at least 4 more years. And there's no intention that she apparently plans to run after taking 4 years off. But she can do this without any consequences and probably to great applause and plaudits from her liberal friends.
That's true. But, you know, the conclusion of Kinkle is fascinating because all those things you said are true. There's no personal recrimination on her, no way to reverse it. But she is part of the Democratic Party, which I'm part too, as you've often remonstrated. And that party would be deeply hurt if someone like Kinkle. So
let's hope that when Tina Kotek runs, she's going to be asked that question. Would you have let all those criminals go? Josh, thanks so very much. Coming up, we'll talk skiing and a senator.
With each new day in this crazy and somewhat disturbing country of ours comes that one story. The headline that, when you hear it, only one response comes to mind.
Are you kidding?
You gotta be kidding me.
You gotta be kidding me.
You must be joking.
No, really, it's true.
Now, here's Lars with today's Are You Kidding Me moment.
Welcome back to the Lars and Shaw. I'm going to get to a naysayer caller in just a moment, but I want to share two specific things with you. One from my friend Steve, who says, Lars, the incumbent Vancouver school board candidate, Sandra Zavala Ortega, appointed last April, has now deleted controversial comments from her Facebook campaign page. In the primary voter's guide, she said she wanted to help, quote, unaccompanied minors. Now, that's a term of art. It refers to illegal alien children who've come across our border illegally. She never explained what she meant. Now, it's like she never said it. She is the union-backed candidate. Her opponent, Michelle Bellcott, is a military veteran with some common sense. Take a look at this. We're going to see if we get Ms. Bellcott on. I'll even ask Ms. Ortega if she's willing to come on and say, number one, what did you mean by saying, I want to run for the school board so that I can help out unaccompanied minors, meaning illegal alien children, which because of a Supreme Court ruling, they do have a right to go to American schools. I don't have to agree with that, but that was what the Supreme Court decided. But why would you campaign for office saying, I'm going to give special help to these illegal alien children, because special help usually means to the exclusion of someone else? Second issue, Oregon Senator, the one who lives in New York City, Ron Wyden, he's now worried about inequity. But do you know where he's worrying about inequity? I just thought I had to mention this. You know, I would be willing to bet that multi-millionaire Ron Wyden, who's been a member of the U.S. Senate, who's never had a real job in his life except in elective office. He is now a United States Senator and one of the most senior ones. He actually makes his home in New York City, where he married a lady who's already a millionaire as well. So they're a very rich household. I'm willing to bet that when he flies from New York City, his home, to the state he pretends to represent, Oregon, there's no way to check. His office won't talk to me. But I'm willing to bet that Ron Wyden sits in first class. And ordinarily, I'd say, well, if a guy or a gal has the money to buy a first-class ticket, they're a lot more expensive, but it is nicer to sit in first class if you can. He doesn't like that same approach when it comes to skiing. Skiing. In other words, now, have I skied in previous years? Yes. Is it an inexpensive sport? No, it's not. The gear is expensive. The time it takes to get to the ski areas is expensive. The gasoline's expensive, especially now with Joe Biden. And of course, buying a lift ticket, you're talking about a lot of money to have a few hours of sliding down the mountain. But apparently at Mount Bachelor Ski Area, the private company that runs that area, it's called Powder, they have decided to have something called a Fast Pass ticket. And what it means is, if you've ever gone skiing, and as I said, I have, I haven't done it in several years, but it's always nice to go right to the front of the line, get on the chair and get back up the mountain so you can get more runs in during a day. Well, they've done exactly what any private company would do. They said, if you want to buy the Fast Pass, you get to ski past the line and go right to the front of the line, or nearer to the front of the line than you would be. Well, Ron Wyden doesn't like this. He says, at a minimum, Powder must delay implementation until it explains to the public how the fast-track policy will not exacerbate equity issues that already exist in outdoor recreation. Snow sports are already expensive enough that equity issues have been persistent, and financially disadvantaged families have long been unfairly priced out of access, something that a fast-track policy is sure to make worse. Now, get this. A U.S. senator is saying he's concerned that a notoriously expensive sport that says, and if you want to spend extra money, you can sit in first class, in effect, by getting to the front of the line faster. You can't do that because it'll exacerbate, some kind of fiscal or financial inequity between people. Between people who are already taking part in a very elite sport that already costs a lot of money. But that's what Ron Wyden is worried about. I want to know, does Ron Wyden, for those of you who fly in and out of the Northwest, have you ever been on an airplane and seen him sitting in coach, or does he sit up in first class? He apparently has rules for thee, but not for me. So, in any case, let's go to a naysayer. I hope Will is a good one. Will, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about today?
We disagree on election fraud. I mean, this is now almost a year ago. Did you see that Giuliani admitted under oath that he didn't interview anyone or fact-check his sources for his court case claims?
No, I didn't, but I don't know what that has to do with election fraud. I think election fraud happens, and I think we saw the evidence of it out of the Arizona audit. Did you pay any attention to that? Because that's not Giuliani. Giuliani is the attorney for President Trump. He's a private attorney in New York City. He's the former mayor, and he was a great mayor. But what does that have to do with whether or not we see fraud in elections?
Well, because Trump's team went 0-60 on court cases. I think it's interesting that you disregard Giuliani now that he...
No, I don't disregard him. He's been a guest on the show. I have great regard for him. I have great personal regard for Rudy Giuliani. But let me ask you this. Did you pay attention to what they found in the Arizona audit? The most recent test of whether or not that was legit.
Yeah.
What'd they find?
So they already recounted twice, and the Greeninger's did a third audit, and they found 300 votes actually went more for Biden.
I get that, but do you understand, Will, when we talk about the fraud, and I'll use this illustration if you'll go along with me, okay? If I owed you $3,000, and I walked up to you and I said, here you go, Will, count this out and make sure it's $3,000, and you counted the bills. And it came up 3,000. And I said, make sure, count it a second time. And you counted it a second time. And it came up 3,000. And then I told you, some of those bills you just counted are counterfeit. I can't tell you how many, but some of them are counterfeit. Would you still call it $3,000?
I would say prove that those are fraudulent.
And that is what the Arizona audit did. It proved that it proved that ballots were counted, tens of thousands of them, that came from people who were not registered to vote in Arizona. It proved that some were counted of people who had moved or had voted twice in Arizona, which you're not allowed to do. It made them counterfeit ballots.
Lars, that's awesome. What turned up from that? Nothing.
Everybody who wanted the election to simply go away, say it was a fine election, there was nothing wrong with it. Will, if you took those bills I gave you and you took them to your bank and they said, I'm sorry, Will, but about 500 of these bills are counterfeit bills, you would not want it to go away. You'd come back to me and I'd say, well, you counted it twice. In fact, count it a third time. Doesn't it always come up 3,000? And you say, but some of the bills are counterfeit. And I said, doesn't matter. Your count came up the same, Will. That's the argument you're using. You're trying to say,
Lars, at the end of the day, how many, you can look at an 0-60 score.
40,000 ballots. 40,000 ballots, Will, to answer your question, because we're close to the break.
0-60.
Yeah, no, 0-60. Do you know how almost every one of the judges decided those cases?
Oh, Trump. Yeah. So
you don't, do you?
Now that 60 judges are
no. You're guessing, and you're in the blind. Will, what happened was those judges said this case was filed too early. This case was filed too late. You're in the wrong jurisdiction. This case is not relevant. Not one of them decided it on the merits of the case. But if that doesn't matter to you, Will, I guess you'd take those counterfeit bills I gave you for paying off that job. In a moment, we're going to talk about the major media, about how they're treating the idea of a consulate in Jerusalem. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I have to admit, I have a dog in the fight. I'm a big fan of the State of Israel. I think they're a terrific U.S. ally. I think that they have been steadfast, even though they are surrounded by enemies who'd like to kill them just because they go to synagogue. So I'm a fan of Israel. I'm also a fan of freedom. And I thought one of the best moves was when Donald Trump became the first president in American history to actually follow a law that was introduced, co-sponsored by the guy who's now president, Joe Biden. He sponsored a law saying it was called the the Jerusalem U.S. Embassy Act, that said we will put the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, which is the capital city of Israel. And then every other American president that came after that law passed, including Clinton, including Obama, including Bush, the whole lot of them said, we're not going to actually follow the law. And then Donald Trump finally did. But now something very strange is happening. And I've invited Colonel Robert Wilkie on. He's the former VA secretary under Trump and, of course, a colonel. And he's at the Heritage Foundation as well. Colonel, welcome back to the program.
Well, it's good to hear from you, Lars. Glad to be back.
I want to know what you think of this, that the Joe Biden administration is now proposing something that is truly bizarre, but it has huge political consequences. They propose to put a U.S. consulate in Jerusalem, and the consulate is specifically to benefit the people of a non-existent country that does not have a capital city of their own, and they want to put it in the capital city of Israel and call it the U.S. consulate for the Palestinians. Do I have that wrong?
Right. No, you have it absolutely right. But what you're seeing is the descent of the Democratic Party from being a pro-Israel party, as it was certainly starting with Harry Truman, to what it is today, when it is dominated by people like Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib.
Don't forget Ilhan Omar.
She's
another person who hates the Jews.
It's vehemently anti-Israel. And Biden, of course, is not strong enough to steer to the course that he once held many years ago. Let's take a look at this. What we're doing is saying that we are recognizing a country, as you said, that doesn't exist, and giving it access in a capital of another country, Israel, in Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the state of Israel, the historic capital of the state of Israel, and the home of the Jewish people. And this is a regime that is even losing, the Palestinians, is even losing support every day amongst the Arab nations. What you saw under Trump was the coming together of Arabs and Jews, putting aside thousand-year hatreds. They have shared interests. The Palestinian issue is something that dominates Arab thought, is really evaporating. And that's because the Palestinians have sidled up to the mortal enemy of both Jews and Arabs, the Iranians. The Iranians are fueling Hamas. They're doing everything that they can to kill Israelis through Palestinians. And, of course, Joe Biden will not take a firm step. And if you look back at his campaign and the Bernie Sanders campaign, they downplayed the role of Donald Trump in the Abraham Accords, really said that they weren't much, and they were never going to make an impact.
But they did, because the Abraham Accords were historic treaties, as you said, between peoples that had formerly gone at it for thousands of years. And now you say Donald Trump and the U.S. government managed to get them to come to the table and say, you know what, we can get along with each other. And they were on track as of last fall, just a year ago, to have 7 or 9 more agreements made in the Middle East. And all of that is now dead, right?
Right, absolutely, as well as the confidence that any of the Arab nations have in Joe Biden. They saw what happened in Afghanistan. They know that he is not somebody that you can count on, that he will twist with the prevailing wind, which will actually make them a little closer to Israel because, again, they have a common enemy, and the Arabs are much more worried about Shia Persians in Mecca than they ever have been about Jews in their homeland in Jerusalem.
Well, and let me ask you this, because I'm afraid that people are going to hear this and say, Lars, what's the big deal? They're opening up, the U.S. proposes to open a consulate dedicated to Palestinian affairs. There's no such country as Palestine, right. But it's just more of an idea. But we're going to open a consulate, a U.S. consulate dedicated to Palestinian affairs, and we're going to drop it right into the capital of Israel. What's the significance of that? And do we do that anywhere else on planet Earth where we already have a U.S. embassy? Do we open a consulate dedicated to somebody who is antithetical to the very idea of the state of, in this case, the state of Israel?
Right. No, there's nothing like it. Absolutely nothing like it. And the Prime Minister of Israel, Bennett, said, well, why don't you just open it? If it's for Palestinians, open it in Ramallah on the West Bank. If you want to talk to Palestinians, talk to them there. But don't bastardize the U.S. embassy for Jews in Jerusalem, the U.S. embassy, by opening up an office that really caters to people who don't recognize Jerusalem as the capital of the state of Israel, and they're still pledged, their government is, on the West Bank to the elimination of Israel and every Jew in the Middle East.
So you're saying we're going to open an office dedicated to people who've said we want to eliminate the existence of your state and the presence of your Jewish people here. That's what we're dedicated to. And the Biden administration proposes to say, let's open up an office for those people
right
in the middle of somebody else's capital.
Absolutely. And that tells you, I think, everything you need to know, other than, remember, this is Biden, part of the Obama-Biden administration that did everything it could to placate the Iranians, to placate the mullahs. Gave them $1.5 billion in cash. And now, after Trump pulled us out of that disastrous agreement, is doing everything it can to get right back into it, led by the Secretary of State, whom you have said on more than one occasion is, as John McCain pointed out, a threat to American security.
Yeah, and in this case, how should the Israelis take this? When the big U.S., that it is a benefactor, but we give money to both sides in many cases. And for those countries that have struck a peace with Israel, like Egypt, we give money to Egypt, we give money to Israel. They can see, and that countries trade with each other. And we now have new trade agreements under the Abraham Accords that came about only because these deals were cut. So everybody benefits, both, you know, Muslims and Jews benefit from doing business with each other. And now we're going to poke the Israelis right in the eye?
Yes, and they may poke back. I understand that their equivalent of the Attorney General, their Justice Minister, Saar, has said that he's not going to permit the United States to open a consulate office for Palestinians in Jerusalem. So we will see if that happens. If it does happen, it will certainly be an equal rebuke to the Biden administration and another terrible misstep and a series of missteps that began on January 20th of this year.
It makes no sense, especially since, as you point out, it's their country. It's their capital. If the Israelis say you're not opening the office here, the Biden administration takes a loss, but they took one for the team and said, but their team now appears to be the murderous, you know, Palestinian government, that they want to take one for the team. I hope Americans take this for what it is. The Biden administration telling one of our best allies, we're going to do something that is deliberately designed to hurt you and to benefit people who'd like to have you all dead. That's Colonel Robert Wilkie, former VA secretary under Donald Trump. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Coming up next, that bow and arrow attack. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Because of that new poll that says two-thirds of likely U.S. voters believe that wider use of mail-in voting is going to lead to cheating, more cheating in elections, and 51% who say it's very likely. That's a poll from Rasmussen. Rasmussen is a down-the-middle kind of polling firm, not hard to the right or hard to the left. Is vote by mail a secure way to hold elections? I would say no to that. And people in Oregon and Washington know about vote by mail, and they should know that it is fraught with opportunities for fraud. You can vote in the Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show. And if you don't like Twitter, go to our website, vote there. It counts the same. That's LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let me go first to Blake. Hey, Blake, welcome to Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars. Thanks for doing what you do. I have a little workaround. I don't know if you guys have talked about it yet, but for those who don't want to get vaccinated,
okay.
I was with some friends this weekend from California, they're teachers, and only for people who've had COVID, I guess. This friend, he is giving plasma. And because of that, he got a note from his doctor saying, hey, we don't want him to mess that up by getting a shot.
That's a good one. That would be a good workaround.
That worked for his school so far.
So with his school district, the school district said that is a legitimate medical exception for you.
Well, I'm not so sure. It's okay for now. Not sure in the long run that's going to work, but it's okay for now. And of course, only for people who've had it before. But they're doing good stuff by helping out other people with their plasma. So
that sounds like a legitimate way to go about it. Thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. By the way, I mentioned that bow and arrow attack yesterday. Ordinarily, you would expect that a strange story. I mean, the definition of news that I've always heard for 46 years is news is not when a dog bites a man. News is when a man bites a dog. You talk about the unusual things that happen. Yesterday, I mentioned to you there was a bow and arrow attack carried out in a small town in Norway. It took the lives of 5 people. But here's the thing that will guarantee that the mainstream media in America is going to avoid this story like the plague. It turns out the man who is believed to be the man who carried out the crime is a Muslim convert who had been previously flagged as having been radicalized, and that comes directly from the police. He is now accused of having shot at people at a number of locations in the town of Kongsberg on Wednesday night in Norway, so their time. Several of the victims were in a supermarket. What the police chief said, Ole Saverud, said there earlier had been worries of the man having been radicalized. He added that there were complicated assessments related to the motive, and they will take time before it's clarified. At least that's a cop who comes out and explains to the community, we think we know what drove this crime, which I think is what every citizen wants to know. This segment of the show is brought to you by Nick Shivers. For an instant offer to sell your home immediately, no showing, no hassles, you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Let's go to Adam in Roseburg. Adam, sorry about the long wait. What's on your mind on Conspiracy Theory Thursday? Adam? Well, Adam's not there. Let's go to Gordon in Spokane. Hey, Gordon, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks, Lars. Yeah, I'm not a doctor, so I just want to say that. The little 10-year-old girl that died back east from COVID, she didn't have to die because ivermectin was okayed by the CDC, like in 1998. India is now like COVID-free because they're using ivermectin. Why don't the people in Washington wake up and go, hey, don't get the jab, because we know that there's been 750,000 people that have had reverse actions from it.
You want my answer on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, Gordon, if you're willing to tolerate a conspiracy today?
Oh, hey, it's every day.
Okay, well, I realize that these days it does seem like every day is conspiracy day. But, Gordon, here's a theory for you, okay? What is ivermectin? It's an antiviral. What is remdesivir? It's an antiviral. What is monoclonal antibodies? Again, Regeneron is an antiviral. And you say, well, why aren't they pushing these antivirals harder? And the answer, I think, and I think it's backed up by the law, the FDA has rules that say you can only give emergency use authorization, which is how they first brought the vaccine in. It's how they brought in all the variations in the booster shots and getting it approved for both adults and then younger kids and then younger kids. All of those came about through an EUA. And the FDA's own rules say you can only grant an emergency use authorization if there are no available and acceptable substitutes. Okay, so the FDA wrote those rules a long time ago. And they said, if you come in with a miraculous new drug and say, I'd like to skip past the usual approval process and get right to just give me the right to sell it. They're going to say, if there are already acceptable and available alternatives, we can't give you an EUA because of our own rules. But if those others, ivermectin, remdesivir, hydroxychloroquine, monoclonal antibodies, and ivermectin, if all of those were acceptable, available alternatives, and they are, then the FDA would be forbidden to approve things. And you notice what Merck has just come out with? They've come out with an antiviral, and they would like an emergency use authorization to sell it, and it's going to sell for one heck of a lot more money than any of the things I just mentioned already. There's a great theory for Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network, and your input is certainly welcome. If you want to call in and join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day on the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for more than 21 years. And if you want to join that conversation, if you're a naysayer, let's say you disagree with me about something, that's fine. We have always welcomed naysayers at 866- Hey Lars. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll today, is vote by mail a secure way to hold elections? I'd say no to that. And I think there's evidence to back that up. But before you say, well, Lars, you must be one of the outliers. Everybody else thinks that vote by mail is great. Let me cite a new Rasmussen Report survey, a poll. And I'll tell you that from my knowledge of the Rasmussen reports, they're a pretty much down-the-middle kind of polling firm. There are some that tilt to the right, and I know who they are. There are some that tilt to the left. Rasmussen tends to just go out, do the surveys. They even post the questions they ask because, as you know, as you can appreciate, if you're doing a public opinion poll, you can slant the questions to produce a certain result. If you're trying to keep a certain client happy, whether they're on the right or the left, Rasmussen doesn't do that, and they always publish the questions they ask. But here's the result. A new Rasmussen Report survey out this week finds that 65% of likely U.S. voters believe that wider use of mail-in voting will lead to more cheating in elections, including 51% who say that is very likely, the cheating that is. 28% don't think that more mail-in voting will mean more cheating, and 14% say it's not at all likely. So you've got two-thirds of likely voters who say, yep, you're going to get more cheating out of that, and a solid majority who say cheating is very likely. So is vote by mail a secure way to hold elections? I get into lots of discussions with people about this because they say, well, I live in Washington. I'm happy with vote by mail. I said, good for you. But are you happy knowing that it's a system built around an idea that allows cheating to be done much more easily and not with much way to catch it? Because understand, this isn't about recounting the ballots. By the time you get to actually counting the ballots, you're already well past the cheating stage. You're past all the ballot harvesting. You're past all the fake or phony registrations. People who don't live in the state anymore. People who are voting twice, voting in two different communities. How in the world are you going to detect that? And you say, well, in fact, literally, I've had the answer come to me from elections officials who say, Lars, people don't cheat. I said, how do you know they don't cheat? And they say, well, when you sign that voter registration card, there's some fine print right under your signature that says, if you sign this and it's not really true, then you are guilty of a felony. I said, oh, so you have a law that makes it illegal to do that. Why, we should have thought of that same kind of thing for armed robbery and said armed robbery is against the law. If only people knew that armed robbery was against the law, all armed robbery would stop. You know, all rape would stop. All murder would stop. I mean, all of those crimes would stop if only people had a little bit of fine print right there that said, by the way, don't murder anybody. It's against the law. It is that silly when people say, there isn't any cheating. We haven't seen any cheating. And they pull a giant Sergeant Schultz. Cheating? I see no cheating. I know nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's their answer. Instead of saying, when you can go out and harvest ballots, and that is done primarily by the Democrats. I'm not aware of any conservative groups that do ballot harvesting. And what's that? What that means is you go out to certain neighborhoods and you knock on doors and you say, did you vote in the election yet? You've got your ballot. It was mailed out weeks ago. And when the person says no, they say, hey, we could help you fill it out. Now, that doesn't mean, I'm not even suggesting, although it is possible, that some of those people doing ballot harvesting are actually, you know, helping more than just a little bit. They're saying, vote for Joe Biden, vote for Jay Inslee, vote for Kate Brown. They could be, but even if they don't do that, if you go to the neighborhoods that you know are high Democrat voter percentages, and you simply go door to door and encourage, I mean, it's awfully tough. Door to door salespeople know this. If you walk up on somebody's doorstep and you say, do you have a ballot? And the person's home, and you know by their registration, they're a Democrat. And they say, yeah, yeah, but I haven't bothered to fill it out. Well, how about I help you fill it out? When you've got somebody standing right there asking you to do it, let's say that precinct splits 70-30 or even 60-40 Democrat, where the Democrats is 60% and only 40%. And you're working off a list that only has you working the Democrat voting households. You can produce voter differences or vote totals that will differ by thousands and thousands of ballots. And as you know, even in presidential elections, 500 and I think it was 56 ballots made the difference in the state of Florida back in 2000 for Al Gore and George W. Bush. A few hundred votes here, a few hundred votes there, and pretty soon you've got a fraud president like Joe Biden sitting in office. Do your calls now. Let's go to Carlos. Hey, Carlos, it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Lars, good afternoon. Thank you for accepting my phone call here.
Sure.
I believe conspiracy theory that China will take us down economically. I think World War III is going to be fought through taking down our economy instead of weapons, of course. I think they would not be brave enough to take into the U.S. head on. What I'm thinking is they've been buying so much property here into the U.S. We own so much money that simply they're going to see that the U.S. is going to default as far as paying their debt. So my point is they're going to start dumping the dollar that they have accumulated, creating maybe hyperinflation and a devaluation of the dollar, thus taking our economy down.
They could. I mean, that's one theory. Carlos, I think a lot of it is going to be economic, but I don't think it's going to be through manipulation of debt. Do you know, there's one thing that I've always wondered about, and it's not that hard to understand. You know what the stock market is, right?
Yes.
So when Boeing is on the stock market, they have to make disclosures about the financial health of the company. So if they're having problems with the 737 MAX, they've got to tell the public everything about what's going on with the company so that investors on Wall Street know what's going on. Do you know that under Biden and Obama, when Biden was vice president, they allowed the Chinese companies to come in and be on our stock markets? But do you know what they didn't have to do? They didn't have to make public disclosures about the financial health of their companies because China said, well, we do want to be on your stock market. They represent about $3 trillion on the U.S. stock market, but we don't want to tell the investors things about our companies that every other company that is on the U.S. stock markets has to say. So they're able to sell us a bill of goods, and you just have to take their word for it that the company is in good shape. But you could be right. China may be trying to supersede the United States, not just militarily and diplomatically, but also on Wall Street. That may be where World War III gets fought. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls. Coming up in a moment, firefighters begging for their jobs right here in the Northwest. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll talk about the Redmond firefighters in a moment. I'll get to your calls as well. I got this one, name withheld. No, actually, he wrote back to me and said he didn't mind. Kyle McDonald. He said, Lars, I work for the Union Pacific. They're mandating us to get vaccinated by December 8th. They're not allowing us to get tested. If we fail to meet the deadline, we will be medically disqualified, not able to return to work until vaccinated. OSHA hasn't even written the mandate. I was wondering if you could shed some light on this. They've been denying religious exemptions. They came out with their own form asking us if we've ever been vaccinated in our lifetime and if we take Tylenol and all other types of medications. I think that would be a HIPAA violation and a violation of privacy. Yeah, I agree with you. And imagine this. Joe Biden goes on television yesterday saying, well, we're going to get those ports unclogged. We're going to have the truck drivers drive more, except that there are companies threatening to fire truck drivers for not getting vaccinated, which is also Joe's mandate. And now the railroads are threatening to do the same kind of thing. And then this one name was withheld. I kept the name off. Lars, I just found out this morning from my wife, who's employed by the Oregon Lottery, that she filed for a religious exemption. She was told by HR that that is personal and confidential. A week later, the director of the Oregon Lottery did a public email stating how many people filed for religious exemptions at the lottery. When he was approached by HR, he told them he was instructed by the DOJ to release those numbers and give them a list of who filed for exemptions. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I think you've got a solid HIPAA violation there. Now, let's go to, I gotta go to the naysayer. Doug, we always go to naysayers first. Welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What do you and I disagree about today?
You seem to think that, or you believe that China did not release this intentionally. And I
I've never said that, Doug. What I've said is, in a lot of ways, it doesn't matter whether they released it intentionally or released it accidentally. What I've said, the important thing is they created the virus in the Wuhan lab. Now, after that, whether it was accidental or deliberate, I mean, I would say there'd be more mens rea, more guilty mind if they said, let's release this on purpose. But even if they released it by accident, they're the ones who created this problem because of their manipulation of the virus. Does it matter at that point if it was deliberate or accidental?
Well, actually, it does, because if you'll allow me to go down the rabbit hole a little bit.
Go for it.
What if this is just a test run? And then they see the efficacy of this, and they come up with something that's even worse, and they hold the whole world hostage, because before they release it, they're going to be the only ones on the planet with the vaccine.
It would be tremendous. I mean, it would be tremendously dangerous, and this is why most of the civilized nations, which does not include China, have agreed not to use biological or chemical warfare. But China isn't held to the rules. So if you say, what if? Well, what if? I mean, I don't trust the Chinese. I would sooner lick a Wuhan toilet seat than trust the commies in Beijing. No, I'm serious about this, Doug. Do you think that that Boeing and Intel and Microsoft and Nike and everybody else gets ripped off for their intellectual property? And we all say, hey, they're breaking the rules. They're breaking the laws. And you say, and the Chinese go, yeah. And we're laughing all the way to the bank. So they don't give, they don't give a damn about breaking the rules, do they?
No, they don't. And they never have. And they're getting more and more blatant about it. And that's concerning. And for two, if I can follow up with another question.
Sure.
Why, as far as I know, I haven't been informed. This virus has affected every country on
Earth. You dropped out for
why
a second.
As far as I can tell, every country in the world has been affected by this virus. We all know where it came from. Why hasn't every country in the world gotten together and handed China one astronomical bill?
Because number one, they won't pay it. And number two, this in a lot of ways, Doug, if I describe, you and I have just talked about how this entity, Communist China, not the people, but the government of China, how they behave. Do they behave a lot like a mob or a mafia or a criminal organization behaves?
Absolutely.
Okay. So do you imagine what would happen in Chicago? let's just go back a ways and say all the people who ever caught a bullet or had their loved one murdered by Al Capone, they march down to Al Capone and they say, hey, Al, here's the bill. What do you suppose the response would be?
I'm just asking.
Well, I'm just saying,
if shot themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Or they'd say, gee, it's really sad that that grocery store of yours burned down last night or is going to burn down tonight. It's like dealing with the Clintons. You notice how many people around the Clintons end up dead mysteriously? People like Jeffrey Epstein and the rest of this bunch. So yeah. if you decide to bell the cat, you know, have you ever, my mom used to tell me stories about, you know, the mice voting for who was going to put a bell on the cat so that when the mice were out cruising around for crumbs late at night, they'd hear the cat coming. And so all the mice get together and they say, hey, let's take a vote. Which one of us is going to go out and put the bell on the cat? Because chances are the person who puts the bell on the cat is going to get eaten himself. So I think a lot of the countries on this planet are scared to death of the Chinese for a whole bunch of really good reasons, because there are about a million different ways that China can get even with you. And I mean, Australia picked a fight with China. And what does China do? China was willing to cut off its own nose to spite its face, because China gets a lot of its coal. But that, by the way, they burn 50% of the coal on planet Earth right now. If you don't believe me, check the numbers. But they burn it to keep their lights turned on and their factories running. And they were willing to say to Australia, you've crossed us, so therefore we're not buying coal from you. And even though it hurts China to do that, it may hurt the Australians too, because everybody who digs coal in Australia, and they produce a lot of it, it gets hurt by that. The government gets hurt. The people get hurt. And China's willing, you know, China's, you know, like a scorched earth policy. They're willing to do things even when it costs them, which kind of fits in with your theory that, well, maybe they made this stuff deliberately. I don't know, Doug. Yeah, in some ways, like I said, if we're going to have a pandemic and it's created because they created a virus, they should be held to account. I noticed that today, for about the 10th time, the World Health Organization is forming another committee to look into the origins of COVID. And you're like, haven't you done this about four different times? And every time you come out and you say, gee, the Chinese, they didn't do this. They're innocent, like a brand new baby. They've never done anything. And it's like everybody on Earth is running around saying, oh, yeah, the Chinese, don't say anything bad. I mean, you want to say something bad about them? I'd sooner be in Chicago saying something bad about Al Capone, you know, crossing Nuestra Mesa in today's America.
Right. But I mean, that's like a comparison of you know, a rat going after the cat. But if all these countries got together, they could squeeze China out of existence.
I wish, because not that I don't want the Chinese people to, but I'll tell you one hardcore change we could make. Taiwan makes about half, I think they make 90% of all the laptop computers in the world. They make a half the desktop computers. That's a lot of money. If you said to the Taiwanese, we want you to make our computer chips, screw China. We're not putting up the intellectual theft. We're not putting up the created pandemics. We're going to buy all of our stuff from Taiwan and Malaysia and every other place on the planet. We don't want to buy from the Chinese anymore and start starving them out economically. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I know a lot of people don't like my idea that I think that perhaps November 3rd was the result, the election that is, was the result of some cheating and some fraud and a bunch of states that just didn't follow their laws. But is it possible that in addition to, perhaps, or in place of, the idea that the election was stolen, perhaps it was just purchased by a very, very rich man? Phil Klein is the director of the Amistad Project at the Thomas More Society. Phil, welcome back to the program, and tell me about the role that billionaire Mark Zuckerberg played in the November 3rd election.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg was joined with other billionaires on the left to purchase the election, the government election offices in the urban core in the swing states, to turn them into a Biden campaign turnout the vote center. And we believe that violated laws. The way the money flowed was through various nonprofits. Those nonprofits actually dictated the manner in which the election would be run. They hired the election officials. They purchased the machines. They bought the people who boarded up the rooms and kicked out the Republicans, and they told them exactly what to do and what voters to turn out. So we are involved in litigation in several states regarding this, and we've been investigating this now for a couple of years.
Okay, so you've got Georgia, you've got Arizona, and a few others. And what they did, what is it that may, and I agree with you, but I want you to explain to my audience what specifically that is that is that violates the laws.
Well, first of all, let's drill down a little bit. Your government office has to run the election objectively.
Right.
You don't stuff money in the umpire's pocket before the game. But here's what they did specifically. I'll just give you a couple of examples. In Philadelphia, there was a Zucker box in the Democrat strongholds, one for every four square miles. That's 2 miles by 2 miles square. Zucker box hired for government people who would ballot harvest and go out and find those votes. And it was almost impossible to not vote in Delaware County and in Philadelphia. Now, at the same time, the Democrat governor, through emergency orders, is shutting down in-person polling places in rural areas, claiming that it's a risk. There was one Zucker box in the 59 counties that Trump won for every 1,159 square miles. So, Democrat, you can't avoid not voting. Republican, you have to go on a weekend where Waldo's hunt to find a drop box. Now, the significance of this is government cannot treat voters differently.
Nope.
We have something called equal protection and the equal protection clause, and you have to treat everybody equally. If you conspire to dilute the vote, that's conspiring to harm a civil right of an individual. So, you know, we saw this before by the Democratic Party in the Deep South at the turn of the 20th century. They targeted demographic, government would, to turn out the vote, and they targeted demographic to suppress the vote. Then it was based on race. Now it's based on party.
So, I'm talking to Phil. I just want to give you credit. Phil Klein is the director of the Amistad Project at the Thomas More Society. So what you've described, and we have to worry about next year's election as well, although I don't want to put November 3rd in the rearview mirror, like so many people, both in elective office and in the mainstream media, want to say, oh, it's over. We don't even need to look at it. But what you're describing are the kinds of things that you could probably get away with and look like you're Zuckerberg, you're one of these billionaires, and you say, I just want to encourage people to vote. So we're going to put out some more ballot collection boxes. What's your problem with that? Well, if you put them out with a bias toward those precincts that are heavily Democrat and not in those places that are heavily Republican, you can affect the outcome of the election because you'll affect the number of ballots that come in. And if they come in from a, you know, like an Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez district, like in New York, where 80% of the people in her district are Democrats, you say, well, we put a box there, but we're not putting the box in. I don't know if there is a precinct in New York City that's heavily Republican. I suppose there must be somewhere, but we didn't put a box in that other place. Just by doing that, you can do something that appears to be innocent, but in fact is calculated to produce a certain outcome.
Absolutely. And it's even more sophisticated than that, Lars. There's something that campaigns use all the time called geofencing. It is measuring people's conduct from their cell phones, from their Facebook, from Google searches and so forth. These billionaires put together geofencing information, predicting behavior, fed that into the government offices where they had their people working so that they could predict how this person was going to go vote, and then government went and got them to vote. The big difference here is government's playing favorites, government with its thumb on the scale. If Zuckerberg wanted to do this and give money to the Biden campaign, he'd have to follow campaign finance laws. If the charity wanted to do it on itself, it could do it by itself, but it can't by government offices to do it, or we're going to have elections brought to you by Coca-Cola, the Koch brothers, the NRA, and a whole list of people in the future buying up the umpires and telling them how to call the game.
Well, and let me ask you this. One thing you just said, a charity could do this. I mean, if it's a charity in the eyes of the IRS, there are some pretty tough guardrails on what charities that are recognized as charities by the IRS are allowed to do, aren't there? Can they legally go out and get involved in that kind of politicking?
Well, not to the degree that they did here, and we believe that they violated the laws. But what you can do, for example, is the legal minimum voters can set up a table and have people register to vote. And they can maybe pick the inner city as a particular area to go to, and government's not going to be concerned about that. But these are government employees, and you said it, determining – it's like this. Let's say government, we had a shortage of paper for paper ballots.
Right.
And they said, well, we can't in New York print all the ballots we need, so we're only going to print them for Democrat districts.
Uh-oh.
And Republicans, I'm sorry, you got to figure out how to vote without a ballot.
Okay, one last issue. I want to ask you, was Zuckerberg involved in what's called ballot curing when it comes to vote by mail? Where, as I understand, I mean, look, I live in a vote by mail place. If you send your ballot in and you neglect to put your signature on it, you can on your own say, I found out my ballot isn't in. Why? You call and they say, well, you didn't sign it. And you say, can I come down if it's before the election and sign it? That's called curing a ballot. Where Zuckerberg, as I understand it, he and his cronies decided to do it strategically. That is, they would try to cure the ballots of Democrat voters, but not try to cure the ballots of Republican voters. Is that kosher?
No, it's not kosher. And yes, that happened in all of these states in various ways. In Philadelphia, they had Zuckerberg-paid employees helping turn the ballots back to the Democratic Party so that they could go out and cure them. In areas where they didn't have Zuckerbox, they knew it to be illegal under Philadelphia law, and they didn't have the resources to try to cure. I could take you to Wisconsin, where unilaterally in the urban core, those people where Zuckerberg put his money decided they could cure. In other parts of the state, they didn't cure. There are examples after example after example of how people were treated differently based upon whether the government office received monies or Zuckerbox. And Zuckerberg is less than half of the money that leftist billionaires poured into the election to manage the election to benefit Joe Biden.
Unbelievable. That's Phil Klein, the Thomas More Society, and the Amistad Project are going after this in court. So for everybody who tells you November 3rd is a done deal, it's over, it was all done by, you know, by the rules and all that, they don't know what they're talking about. This has to be fixed. And if it's not fixed, then the elections will be fixed from this point forward in America. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join, if you're a naysayer, you can call in. We'll put you right to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. I'll get to your calls in just a moment. And I want to ask the question, what the heck is wrong with Katie Couric, and why is the rest of the media covering up for her? I'll tell you my specific complaint up next on the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I'd kind of like to hear from my friend Betsy Johnson right now. She is a state senator. She is also a member of the Democrat Party. I remind her of that all the time. But she has just announced, according to Oregon Capital Insider, I thought maybe we'd get the chance to bring her announcement to the air. Senator Betsy Johnson, they say a moderate Democrat, announced today she is running for governor in Oregon as an independent. She is a member of the Oregon legislature, has been there for the last 20 years. She said in the announcement she hoped her candidacy would offer an option between the current Democrat and Republican choices. It's going to make the field very, very interesting. Having to choose between another left-wing liberal promising more of the same or a right-wing Trump apologist, she says, not a fan of Trump, is no choice at all. Oregonians deserve better. I will look forward to talking to Senator Betsy Johnson. If she wants to call me up, it's 866-HEY-LARS, by the way. That's 866-439-5277. Just got that word literally minutes ago. Let me go to your calls now. Let's start with Robert in Tacoma. Robert, thanks for listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
So, as you know, I live in Washington, as you do, and suffer the same grievances with our mail-in ballots, which, in my opinion, is just nothing but a cheating scam devised by the left.
Agreed.
I agree that we should have a voter ID. Along with that, to back up the voter ID, why can't we put a fingerprint on our ballot when it's submitted to prove, yes, this is the person who's casting the ballot, as well as to prevent
somebody from taking a Democrat's ballot and running it through a copy machine 1,000 times, as we saw in the presidential election, where they made mass amounts of copies of ballots.
Well, let me ask you something. Have you ever been arrested?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So your fingerprints are on file. You're aware that the vast majority...
Anybody who's been in the military, their fingerprints are on file.
And those fingerprints...
State of Oklahoma, in order to get an ID or a driver's license, you have to submit a fingerprint.
But we don't have a comprehensive... And if you thought the Democrats pitched a fit to the idea of voter ID, which I think should not be a problem, they keep telling us there's a mythical person out there, probably somebody who's black or brown, who doesn't have a driver's license or photo ID. I don't believe that such a person exists. And in fact, when they went to court, the judge said, "Do you have a single person you can show us as an example?" But if you think they pitched a fit about that, wait till you hear what happens from both the right and the left when you say everybody has to be fingerprinted when they register to vote. How do you think that's going to go over?
It's not necessarily a matter of registering to vote. I mean,
but I'm asking if you're going to confirm that my ballot is my ballot based on my fingerprint. I've never been arrested. Where are you going to get my fingerprint?
Well, so that's the thing. If you have your fingerprint on the ballot, it doesn't necessarily have to be on record with the state that you're
well, yeah, it does, though, Robert, because if you're saying, say I sit down and I fill out 10 ballots with 10 different names on them, and they're all, and 9 of them are fake, and you say, well, we'll be able to tell the difference. And you say, how are you going to tell the difference? Well, we're going to check the fingerprints against a file. Most of the people in America don't have their fingerprints on file.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you, all of a sudden you're seeing the same fingerprint appear on 10, 100, 5, 3 different ballots, doesn't matter how many,
Robert, think about this practically. So you get, in last number, I can't remember the total number of votes cast in the last Washington state election, but let's say a few million people all put their fingerprints on the ballot, and you suspect that there are 2 ballots out of 3 or 4 million ballots that may have the same fingerprint on them, you're going to have to run the entire list of every fingerprint through a system that looks for duplicates, right?
Correct, yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Well, APHIS actually does that.
APHIS does it if you're but you're only in the APHIS system if you've committed a crime. And by the way, those fingerprints from the military, I've had some fascinating conversations with the cops about those. They said, well, everybody who's in the military has their fingerprints on file. I said, are you allowed to use that in a criminal investigation? They said, no, we're not. The Pentagon will not let us use it for that purpose. So when you think, well, all the people who've served in the military are in there, everybody with a concealed carry permit has their thumbprint at least, or in the case of Oregon, fingerprints on file, but you're not allowed to use any of those files. So you're talking about taking every single ballot in the state with the person's name still on the outside, running it through a scanning machine, and then looking for duplicates. I'm suggesting that is going to be it's an almost impossible task. And you'll be at it probably for weeks. Remember, if the ballots go out 3 weeks before the election, you're proposing that we run every single one of those envelopes through a system all the way up to election day on the eve of the election and compare all the fingerprints. I just don't think there's any way to make that work. But it's an interesting idea. I mean, and if you could find a way to make it work, perhaps that would work. But I think there's a practical problem there. Most of the people are not in the system.
Well, granted, I agree. And so I served in Iraq, and I was there when there were elections. Same thing in Afghanistan. That's exactly what they did over there. You dipped your finger in the ink, you put your
fingerprint
on
your ballot. And if you're proposing to go back to voting at the polls, I'm 100% behind you, buddy. Let's go back to voting at the polls.
I agree. And that's exactly what we need to do, is get rid of mail and go back to that.
I would get rid of vote by mail in a heartbeat, and you could only get an absentee if you're truly, truly not able to get there.